welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zaro-Kopinski. This week, I'm excited to welcome Jerry Kraft to the podcast to discuss his latest book, New Kid. Jerry Kraft is an author and illustrator who has worked on numerous picture books, graphic novels, and middle grade novels. His latest book, New Kid, is a middle grade graphic novel that has earned 4-starred reviews, including one from Kirkus, which called it an engrossing, humorous, and vitally important graphic novel that should be required reading in every middle school in America. I very much agree. Jerry has won 5 African American Literary Awards, is the creator of the award-winning comic strip Mama's Boys, and is co-founder and co-producer of the Schomburg's annual Black Comic Book Festival. Jerry was born in Harlem and grew up in nearby Washington Heights and is a graduate of the Fieldston School and received his BFA from the School of Visual Arts. Jerry Kraft, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm really excited to talk with you today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. So I love the book. Congratulations. It's been getting so much praise, which is well-deserved. For people who haven't gotten to take a peek at it yet, can you tell us about the story and about the main character, Jordan?
Sure. So it's loosely based on my life as a kid. I always wanted to be an artist. But my parents, you know, that whole term starving artist just resonated in their head so much that they didn't think that me nor anyone can make a living as an artist. And so instead of letting me go to art and design and music and art in New York City, I went to Fieldston in Riverdale. And now it was interesting because, you know, where I grew up in Washington Heights, you know, all my friends and neighbors were African American or maybe Puerto Rican, Dominican, you know, along those lines. And even in my schools, you know, my 7th grade class and 8th grade class was like 25 kids, of which 23 were African American. And now all of a sudden, I'm in this elite private school where out of 110 kids, maybe 10 of us were African American. And maybe half of those kids, if they had been in Fieldston the entire life, you know, we really didn't have that much in common. So it's a definite fish out of water story. But one of the other things that I hoped would make it more interesting was also Jordan Banks, who is the protagonist, trying to keep his friends and maintain his friendships from his, you know, his friends around his neighborhood that he's known for years, and not have them think that now since he's in this fancy school that he was too good for them or, you know, something like that. So that's the basis of it.
Yeah. It's such an interesting story. And I think, a really powerful one that a lot of kids will relate to. And I'm sure you're hearing that. And then at the same time, it's so funny. And, I love the graphic novel format for this. I think, there's so many kids that, you know, will relate to it, but also it's just such a, you know, it's entertaining and you've got the visual element as well, which I think just adds a whole other layer to the storytelling, which is great. At what point, you know, you had this experience growing up, at what point did you sort of think, oh, I think this would make an interesting book?
You know, I had thought about it for maybe the last 6 or 7 years. And, you know, I have been self-publishing since 1997 because I got so many rejection letters when I would reach out to traditional publishers. And some of them were actually kind of mean. They weren't just form letters. You know, they would take the time to write handwritten notes that were like so discouraging. And I know that a lot of what is out there that feature African-American protagonists, there are a lot of books on, you know, historical figures like Martin Luther King and Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, and, you know, a lot of civil rights stuff. And they're all important books, but that was not what I personally wanted to do. You know, I wanted to add to their narratives by just having, you know, like I have 2 sons, and when they were in middle school, I saw how they were with, you know, the Wimpy Kid series or the Percy Jackson series or something that they just loved, you know. And I wanted to do a version that had African American protagonists that could make them laugh the same way, make them care the same way, and have them look and hug that book and say, "This is my book because I am Jordan Banks." So it literally wasn't until 2014 that I felt comfortable enough even pitching the idea to publishers, because like I said, they had been so just unencouraging, And I got an agent, and when we found HarperCollins, they absolutely loved it. My editor, Andrew Eliopoulos, really got it. And then I was like, wow, you mean to tell me that there's actually a possibility that this can be printed? And I literally had my fingers crossed up until the time that I had an advanced reader copy in my hand. And then, and only then could I relax and like, okay, this is really going to happen.
Wow, it's so interesting that you say that they were not very encouraging. I mean, I would never know that. It's just so surprising because it must feel very validating and maybe a little bit of like, I told you so, because now the book, I mean, couldn't be getting any more glowing of reviews. You've gotten all these starred reviews and people are responding to it in such a big way. Does it feel a little bit surreal to have that sort of 180 from the publishing community?
Oh, absolutely. And it's so funny now because, again, in my 20 years of self-publishing, I've had so many doors close, whether they're from book festivals or publishers. And now, not only are they saying, "Hey, can you come?" but it's like, "Hey, would you like to write a cover blurb for one of our new books? Or can we do this? Or would you like to be part of that?" And that definitely is surreal, because I felt like all this time, they were in fancy restaurants and I had my little hot dog cart out on the street looking in as they walked past me. And now all of a sudden, being seated at, their best table, like, "Oh, Mr. Kraft, what would you like? Would you like to start with an appetizer?" And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. So yes, it's definitely surreal.
That's awesome. Well, it's very well deserved, and I know I kept thinking, well, twofold. I feel like graphic novels in my school library, we just could not keep on the shelves. Like as soon as one would come back, like out it goes to another kid, and especially if it's funny, especially if it's relatable. And in this case too, the other piece I just thought was so great. It's exactly what you're talking about. The librarians in my district, a couple years ago were really trying to focus on making sure our book collections were reflecting our student population. It was a very diverse school, and so many times we'd be looking at books to add, and it's exactly what you're saying. It would be a lot of like issue books or these like very worthwhile historical fiction books, but that's not like reflecting our kids' everyday experiences. And there's some funny scenes in the book as well where like even I forget which teacher is handing one of the kids this they consider this like very like gritty sort of
Oh,
urban story that
that's a librarian, Miss Brickner.
yeah, and that doesn't reflect their experience either. And just in this case, I feel like Jordan will just as you say, like I feel like so many kids are gonna like hug this book thinking like, this is so true to my life and my experiences and my family, and it's funny. And I don't know, I just feel like there's such a need for these books. And when we talk about the whole like we need diverse books movement, it's not that I mean, of course we also do need those important
Right.
books, but we also just need kids being kids, and that's I feel like what
Right.
is hard to find sometimes. And publishing, it seems like it's starting to kind of wake up to that, but it's taking a while. So
Yeah.
it's great to have your book.
You know, I I like to say that I am, that New Kid is at diversity to the diversity, in the sense where, like you said, when you see the books that are really like doing amazing things, like Angie Thomas with The Hate U Give and On the Come Up, and Jason Reynolds' books, and but they do have some heavy stuff to them, and I just wanted to do something that was laugh out loud funny, and that, you know, maybe when you're halfway through, you can kind of relax and say, wait a minute, I don't think anything bad is going to happen. You know, I think that all the characters may actually survive to the end of the book. So I think what you know, because kids also need to see themselves that they will actually, especially kids of color, that they will actually make it to be adults, you know? So if every kid who looks like them in a book doesn't make it past 18, you know, I think subliminally that maybe does a little something. You know, it's like watching the Disney cartoons where every single movie the parents die or get killed or have some horrible accident, and then it's like, okay, well, now it's me and my dog and just the rest of our lives. You know, I just wanted something where they could relax and laugh.
Yeah. Well, and I think along with that too, when you're talking about like the deeper issues that they will maybe reflect on as they're going along, maybe after having reading it or, you know, partway through, there is, you know, Jordan is dealing with racism throughout the book, but in this, sort of, it's not this very overt racism. It's this constant daily,
right?
You know, these microaggressions, and you know, watching that side of it made me think too, what an important read this is for teachers. And I think it would, you know, these are discussions I think teachers are trying to have, and I think it would make a great read for like a staff book club, right? Or you know, just such a jumping off point, because the teacher in it, or I mean, several of the teachers do this, but I think her name is Miss Rawl in particular, was just making me cringe as I was reading. I'm sure there have been teachers in your experiences, or maybe your kids, that have maybe been a Miss Rawl. Did some of that get drawn from real experiences?
You know, so I think one of the reasons why I was able to pack so much in was it was my 4 years at Fieldston, but then my sons went to a private school in New Canaan, which is equally as affluent as the Riverdale community. And that was the one where I saw a lot of that. So there were, you know, Black teachers who had been there for years that other Black teachers would still confuse. I mean, other teachers would still confuse and say, oh, you know, how's your baby? It's like, nope, I'm not the one with the baby. That's the other one who's 2 feet shorter than me and 20 pounds heavier. But, you know, so that happened. And really, you know, when you talked about the books with the librarian, just for our listeners, there's a scene where the librarian says to the white kid, like, oh, here's a book for you. You're going to love this. It's The Magic of the Magical Magicon, A Magical Tale of Adventure. And then to the Black kid, it's like, and here's one that, you know, for you, The Mean Streets of South Uptown. It's a gritty tale of the grit of today's urban grittiness. And I do think that our kids don't get to be kids as long because of, you know, they're expected to grow up early and expected to have hard lives and need grit and all that. So I do think that, like there was a school in Massachusetts and in Brooklyn where they had the teachers, the apprentices read it, like the faculty, and then they talk and then they have the kids read it and then they all kind of come together. Because there definitely are things that we can all do better. And even as an author, that has not stopped. Like, I am still Jordan Banks because I went to do a school visit, and I'm, you know, proud to go in there, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, reach these kids. And the woman's like, oh, here, come with me. We've been expecting you. I'm like, oh, great. And we go up the stairs and around the corner and open up the door, and I'm thinking it's an assembly, and there's this little room. And I'm like, okay. And we stare at each other and like, why are we here? And she's waiting for me to get started. I'm like, what is this? She's like, aren't you here to fix the copier?
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, no, I'm the author who's here that up until 10 minutes ago was feeling really good about himself.
Yeah. Wow. It's something that would definitely appear in the book. It fits, fits right in with his experiences. You know, it's interesting too. I read, you were saying, I think in another interview, that you felt a little bit as a kid less prepared for some of those circumstances than your sons, because you were able to sort of give them a little bit of a window into being at a school like this. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think for some families of color, if their kids get to the point where they, you know, are accepted into these schools, that they are so happy that they don't want to complain in the least. And they're just like, suck it up, get through there, you'll get your education, you'll be fine. And so my parents were basically like that. They're like, okay. And, you know, I don't ever remember sitting down and having conversations with them, like, what's it like being one of the few black kids? You know, what's it like doing this? What's it like trying to keep your friends who now may think, oh, you know, why do you talk like a white kid? Or why do you do this? Or do you think you're better? You know, they just kind of left me to my own devices. And so when my sons went to the school in New Canaan, their mom and I would always sit them down and just be very conscious. And I was also very conscious to be an active dad. So I would go in and draw for the kids or make ice cream or whatever to show them, you know, that there are African-American men and middle-class families where, you know, we have jobs and we, you know, because I think some communities are so isolated that the only time that they see people of color is when it's like community service day, you know, and they're going and handing out sandwiches and things like that. And I wanted to show them that every time that they saw a African-American man, they didn't feel like they had to go and hand him a sandwich or, you know, automatically think that, you know, they were distressed or, you know, like I said, their mom and I really went out of our way to be on the PTO and the diversity committee and really kind of embrace them, but have them embrace us as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting with your book, I think this is why that whole idea of windows and mirrors and kids' books is so important, because, you know, I think it's also, as much as it's going to be a mirror for a lot of kids, I think it is also a window. And that just kind of got me thinking what you hope that kids are going to take away from the book, and also maybe what teachers and librarians would take away from the book.
So, you know, that could be a show in itself. I'm sure you have limited time. So if I get past like the 2-hour stage, just let me know. But again, you know, okay, so my sons, when it was their birthday or Christmas, whatever, people don't have any second thought with giving them Wimpy Kid, Percy Jackson, kids that look nothing like themselves, that look nothing like them. That really doesn't happen. You know, the opposite doesn't really happen. And again, I have self-published for 20 years, and there's always brown kids on the cover. And you know, there would be teachers who would buy my book, but there were very few parents who would say, oh, I'm going to buy this book with this little brown kid on it and give it to my kid. You know, it was, they would see my table and it was like a boy walking down, you know, that pink aisle at Walmart that's all dolls, and be like, oh, there is nothing here for me at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see that kind of thing where a white kid would look at a book and say, oh, you know, like my kids would be, oh, I want to be Percy Jackson. I want to be, you know, Greg Heffley. I want to be Captain Underpants. But you don't see characters like that, that white kids might aspire to, because like I said, a lot of the books are historical. So I don't think they'll say, oh, when I grow up, I want to be Frederick Douglass.
Right.
You know, like it's just not the same kind of thing. So I wanted to make Jordan Banks such a nice kid, you know, that any kid would like him, you know, boy or girl. I purposely put him in a hoodie because that always has such a bad connotation of, you know, wearing a hooded sweatshirt. So I just really wanted to make him, and even Drew, like two of the nicest kids that it, you would really have to go out of your way not to like them. As I did with Liam, because I think a lot of times when you see the quote unquote rich kids, that they are pretty obnoxious. You know, having grown up with the old John Hughes movies where every rich kid was James Spader and they were just like real jerks.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to give him real humanity and personality and just a real kindness to him. Alexandra with the puppets, you know, that people think is kind of the weird girl. And I just wanted to show her other side so that kids aren't always so quick to judge. So I wanted kids to be able to do the windows, the mirrors, the sliding doors. And I wanted teachers to, and librarians to look and say, okay, you know what? I may not have been embracing the whole child. Instead of a melting pot where everyone gets melted down and we, you know, kick out the same kid, that we do the salad where, you know, if you're a tomato, you're a tomato, and you're, you know, cucumber, you're a cucumber, and you keep your color, but together, all that makes like one pretty amazing flavor.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And I think when you're talking about the, Liam, I thought their friendship was such a wonderful addition to this. And yeah, and then that's it, just it's full of surprises. And I think we'll get kids talking about not falling into stereotype. Well, I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I would also just love to hear, because it's a graphic novel, it just gets me curious about sort of the process of creating the book itself. Like, do you focus on the writing first or the illustration, or what was the process like for actually creating the book?
So I actually cannot help but sketch out the entire thing. So I do a story arc where I literally draw almost what looks like a roller coaster, right? That starts and then it goes up and then it comes down. So it's like a, you know, like a turtle shell or whatever, right? And that way I plot out what the zenith of the story is, what the high point of the big action is, what goes up into it, and then what happens after. And then I put in all these little checks, almost like a graph of like, okay, this has to happen, and this has to happen, and Jordan meets Liam, then he meets this, then he meets Andy, then there's this, and then here's the big scene, and then here's what they learned from it. And then once I do that, I go right into thumbnailing out pages. I literally, you know, it's almost like how you see it in a book, but just like maybe stick figures and things like that. But I do put in the word balloons. So by the time I give it to my editor, he can read it like an actual book, as opposed to I just did a panel in New York last week with a few other people who do graphic novels, and they said that they actually type out the entire story like a prose story. So yeah, I definitely like to draw it out and then hand it. That way it doesn't leave anything to interpretation. You know, I have exactly kind of like the cadence and the count and the surprises, because, you know, there's certain pages where I want there to be a surprise. So I make sure that as soon as you turn the page, you don't see it on the other side of the page and give away the joke. So now I'm actually working on New Kid 2. And
I was going to ask, there is a sequel.
There is a sequel. It is entirely laid out and sketched out. And now I am turning that into serious art. So I'm taking my sketch pages and turning that into finished pages.
That's very exciting. I was hoping there might be news of a sequel. And because this is fresh on your mind, this, I was also curious too. So from idea to like finished artwork and writing, how long did New Kid take you? I guess it might be different for the sequel, but what's the process like for time wise?
So I pitched it at an impromptu meeting at a publisher in 2014. And then they were like, oh, this is great. Can you sketch out a few pages? So that's when I actually started putting it on paper for the first time. So that was 2014. And then, you know, ups and downs, and, you know, it wasn't like ordered. It wasn't something that, you know, I had a commitment for. So it took me, I would say, maybe 2 years to really get it how I wanted it. And then I met with my agent and my editor at Harper, Andrew Eliopoulos, and it was like January of 2017. And that was when it was like, okay, get working. Like, don't even finish your food. Go home and start working. And I work out of my house. So I probably drew 7 days a week every day from like 9 a.m. till sometimes 1, 2 or 3 a.m. from January 2017 until February of 2018. So that was about 13 months of like continuous drawing. And then I had some revisions that I had to make with, you know, after it was proofreading and continuity issues. And then I think I handed it in final in April. And then I saw the advanced reader copy for the first time in maybe October. And then the book came out February 5th of 2019.
Wow. Yeah. So it's been a journey. I mean, you can tell I'm just flipping through. I mean, you could just tell how much time and work and thought went into, I mean, there's so many illustrations and then the writing as well is so well done. And it just gets me thinking, I will be rooting for New Kid for lots of book awards. I'm sure it's going to get its due, or that's my prediction at least. I did have one other question I wanted to ask you, which is just, I always love to hear from authors and illustrators what books they have been reading lately. If there is a book that you've read that you would want to recommend to listeners, and it can be a kid's book, it can be an adult book, anything you've read lately.
So I read a lot of graphic novels. That's probably what I read most. So in the non-graphic novel, the one that I'm almost finished with is The Voice Inside My Head by Dana L. Davis, which I really like. And I like that because it is about an African-American family, but it's not, you know. There's twin sisters, and one of them is terminally ill, but there's a way that they might be able to save them. So they go on this road trip. So it's almost like, you know, Chevy Chase's Vacation meets I don't know what, but the humor is good. I love the characters, and I like it because it's a different type of story, again, for African-American family. I read Dear Justice League by Michael Northrup, which is a graphic novel, which I liked a lot. That was pretty cool. And it's a more of a young reader. And then, you know, I love Renee Watson stuff, Piecing Me Together.
Yes.
Renee is...
She has a new one coming out, right? I feel like I just saw that recently. Yep.
So, and one of the coolest things for me also is meeting these authors and, like, signing each other's books and, you know, so seeing E.B. Zaboy. And I remember going to the North Texas Teen Book Festival. And I tweeted, oh, yeah, I'm going to bring my copy of The Hate U Give, and hoping that Angie Thomas will sign it. And she tweets back, oh, and I'm bringing my copy of New Kid for you to sign it.
And that's awesome.
Holy moly. Like, I had never met her, had never interacted. So we met each other, and we signed each other's books. And, you know, that was cool.
That's awesome. That's so nice to have that, like, writing community and people
Elizabeth
supporting
each other. And Jason Reynolds and Kwame Alexander. My buddy Eric Velasquez has a book that I can't wait for that to come out called Octopus Stew, I think. I hope I didn't get that wrong. But that'd be
awesome. I can look it up to make sure. Yes, I'll link to all the books we mentioned in the show notes if people want to check those out. And you might have said this already, but do we have a date for New Kid 2?
Well, in theory, Harper would like me to be done by, like, Christmas of this year. So I may invite you over to help color some pages and all hands on deck, since you want to see so badly.
Yes, we got to get that sequel out.
Yes, so we have to, you know, takes a village. So ideally, if I can finish this by December, which is interesting now, because when I was working on the first book, I didn't have all the travel responsibilities that I do now. So it's like, hey, you know, we'd like you to finish this by November, but in the meantime, can you go to TLA and ALA and North Texas Teen Book and BEA and, you know, NCTE? It's like, okay, that's going to be interesting.
The promotion, I know, is a big undertaking.
So ideally, we are looking for a fall 2020 launch.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, it's always nice to hear that there is a sequel to a book you really enjoyed in the works. Yes. I'm curious if that was coming.
There'll be two more, definite.
Oh, there'll be two more. Oh, wonderful.
It will be a trilogy.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, there are going to be lots of very excited kids when they find out there's two more books coming. Well, I just really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And I hope parents, teachers go out and get the book for their kids, or, you know, even just subtly pick up a copy and leave it out on the coffee table for them to pick up. And I'll definitely be looking out for the next books, and just congratulations. It's really a great read, and it's been an honor to get to chat with you.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, the graphic novel format for reluctant readers, because I was a reluctant reader, so that was why I wanted to do it in graphic novel format. And I have gotten a lot of feedback from kids, like, this is the first book of this size that I've ever read, and I read it 3 times in a week. So that's
awesome.
So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to add too, you know, it's one of those graphic novels that I feel like appeals to that kid that only reads graphic novels, but it also appeals to kids that have maybe never picked up a graphic novel, but, you know, read a lot of realistic fiction. So I feel like it just has such a wide appeal. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to make Brandon Telgemeier proud of me.
Yes. Well, thank you again. For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head to abookishhome.com. There you'll also find plenty of other adult and kidlit book recommendations. To learn more about Jerry Craft, you can visit his website, jerrycraft.net.
You can also follow him on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Jerry Craft. If you're not already, please take a moment to subscribe to A Bookish Home in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you also have a moment to rate or review, that would be so helpful. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at A Bookish Home. Thanks for listening and happy reading.